From Breezewood to Hermitage, Milroy to Waynesburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Tuesday is primary election day. Offices including President of the United States, U.S. Senator, State Treasurer, Auditor General, Attorney General, along with seats in Congress and the state legislature, are all on the ballot. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting joins us with an overview. A lawsuit may force Allegheny County to undertake a property reassessment. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi are here with an Allegheny Institute report. And despite the high cost and threat to the electric grid, the Biden administration continues to push regulations designed to force Americans into electric vehicles. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. After an investigation by Broad and Liberty found a Democrat-aligned website was collecting voter data for political purposes while looking like an official state website, Representative Seth Grove of York County called on the Shapiro administration and the Pennsylvania Department of State to put an end to the practice. In a news release, Grove said, quote, "It is absolutely unacceptable for third-party entities to use the guise of voter registration as a cover for their data theft operations." He added, quote, "Vote PA is a prime example of such a malicious attempt." Grove was also critical of Governor Shapiro's Election Threats Task Force for failing to pick up on the scheme. A special election will be held Tuesday in northeastern Pennsylvania to fill a vacant seat in the State House of Representatives. The seat is safely Republican, which will reduce the Democrat majority in the chamber to just one seat. But an arrest warrant was issued this past week for State Representative Kevin Boyle of Philadelphia for allegedly violating a protection from abuse order. Boyle is also in trouble for engaging in a drunken outburst at a local bar. Should Boyle's legal troubles force him to resign the seat, the chamber will, once again, fall into a 101-101 tie. Boyle already faces a tough primary re-election battle against challenger Sean Dougherty, who is being heavily supported by the House Democratic Campaign Committee. Looking ahead to the general election, incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. and Republican David McCormick both have clear paths to their respective party nominations on Tuesday, but the race is expected to be one of the most competitive and expensive in the nation, as control of the U.S. Senate currently also hinges on just one seat. McCormick picked up the endorsement of former President Donald Trump during the Trump rally in the Lehigh Valley last weekend. In 2022, Trump supported Dr. Mehmet Oz for the seat, ultimately won by John Fetterman. Oz defeated McCormick for the GOP nomination that year by less than 1,000 votes. This time around, the field has been cleared for McCormick, who now proceeds to the general election with Trump's support. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. 2024 is a presidential election year, and that means our primary election in Pennsylvania is held in April rather than in May. Voters will go to the polls on Tuesday to cast ballots in races ranging from President of the United States to state representative. Chris Nicholas is a veteran political consultant with Eagle Consulting. He traditionally joins us for a look at what will be on the ballot. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, we have the primary election coming up here in just a couple of days, April 23rd. Republicans have their primary, Democrats have their primary, and we have some battles going on around the state. So why don't we start out taking a statewide view of things? We have obviously every office from president through statewide row or constitutional offices. What do you see happening there?
Yes, Loman, good to be with you again. The top two races, President and U.S. Senate, the primaries are both nothing burgers. They're done. So both those races, which are going to be very important and razor sharp close, Those are just going to be postponed to the general election because the primaries are all over. On the state row offices, as you said, attorney general, auditor general, and treasurer, there will be four primaries there. So let's start first with the Democrats because they have primaries for all three offices. They have five Democrats running in the race for attorney general and two Democrats each in the race for auditor general and treasurer. So the attorney general's office is open because the former attorney general, Josh Shapiro, is now our governor. And the person he appointed to take over for that position pledged not to run again, and she is honoring that pledge. She has an open seat. For state auditor and state treasurer, both those offices are held by incumbent Republicans. Tim DeFore is the Republican auditor general, Stacey Garrity, the Democratic treasurer. So obviously those folks are unopposed. So the Democrats are running what I would think would be three very spirited primaries for all those seats. And those row offices, as we call them, Loman, they are oftentimes overlooked in the fall because they always run the same time as the president. And then this year we have the Senate race as well. So they're having their moment in the primary. On the Republican side, there is a two-way race for attorney general. And so that means that both parties are picking brand new for attorney general. The Democrats have a primary for auditor general and treasurer, and the Republicans have their two incumbents. The way it works in Pennsylvania, Loman, is you can run for those row offices, and you can stay in office two terms. So the Democrats are going to especially focus on the attorney general's race because that's an open seat. And it's always a little bit easier to win an open seat than it is to beat an incumbent.
So we have these statewide row or constitutional offices up here in the primary and ultimately to be filled in the general election this November. Let's move now to some of the key races for Congress. Of course, the United States House of Representatives is down to, a one- or two-seat Republican majority. So every district matters, and a lot of what is going to happen is decided in the primary, depending on who the nominees are. So we have about three districts where we have interesting primaries. Can you give us an overview in those districts?
Sure. As you said, Loman, the Republicans now have literally a one-seat operating majority because they have a couple of open seats that when they are filled later this year, it'll go back up to four, but just like our state house, which has a one-seat Democratic majority, the Republicans have a one-seat functioning majority in the U.S. House. So let's go across the state from east to west. In the Lehigh Valley, you have a big race on the Republican side on the 7th Congressional District. That district is Lehigh County, Northampton County, Carbon County, and a very small slice of Monroe County. And those Republicans, there's three of them, are running to try to become the nominee to go after the Democratic incumbent there, Susan Wild. She has won her last two races by less than 2%. So she is, I think, right there at the top of the Republican target list. Moving a little bit more to the central part of the state where you and I are located, there's a big Democratic primary for Congress in the 10th District to try and take on incumbent Republican Scott Perry. Last year, he served also as chairman of the Freedom Caucus, which is by nature a very contentious group. So you've got a lot of Democrats gunning for them. You've got one well-known candidate who was a 35-plus year veteran of being a TV anchor, and five other candidates. So that one is definitely a melee. And while we were filming this, you and I together now recording this, I just saw an ad on the TV for one of the people in that race. Moving further to the west, we have the 12th Congressional District, which is held by Representative Summer Lee. She is the one member of the squad, very far liberal Democratic members of Congress. She's the one member from Pennsylvania, and she is in the middle of a primary. It was originally against two candidates, but one dropped out. So that seat encompasses all of the city of Pittsburgh and then some suburban areas. So that seat is seen right now potentially as more of a primary fight than a general election fight. But, you know, Loman, stranger things have happened sometimes, and we've seen it here in the past. A candidate, an incumbent especially, gets dinged up in the primary, and then they're weakened as they go into the general election. So between our big U.S. Senate race, between Republican challenger Dave McCormick and the Democratic incumbent Bob Casey Jr., and these hot congressional races, and the presidential race, your listeners are going to have a lot of TV ads coming their way, a lot of radio ads coming their way, and a lot of mailers in their mailbox for sure.
Well, certainly Pennsylvania is going to live up to its reputation of being a battleground state on all of these federal races. And if we drill down here a little bit, Chris, into state legislative races, which tend to not really get as much coverage except some isolated incidents, let's talk first of all about the Pennsylvania State Senate. The Republicans are in control there by a reasonable number, but there are some contentious elections going on in that body as well, correct?
Correct. So the state Senate has 50 members, and in this presidential year, the way it works is all the members in the odd-numbered seats stand for re-election, okay? So right now, the Republicans have a 28-22 advantage. Democrats, because we have a Democratic governor, have the Democratic lieutenant governor to break a tie. So in their mind, they need to gain three seats to make it a tie at 25 all, and then the Democratic lieutenant governor, Austin Davis, could break ties. So they have their eyes on a seat in suburban Harrisburg, a seat in suburban Pittsburgh, and the seat that encompasses the city of Erie and most of the county of Erie. So those are those three big seats for them. Those are all Republican-held seats. Two of them you have Republican incumbents running. So again, as I've said before, incumbents are harder to beat because they've already won election there at one point. So the Democrats have an uphill battle, but they are confident that with what they're thinking, a strong showing by President Biden and Senator Casey will help them push these Republican incumbents out.
Speaking of legislative bodies that have narrow majorities, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, really a one-seat difference. We do have a vacant seat now that will be filled here in the primary by a Republican. It's heavily Republican. So you have a one-seat Democrat House majority. We've had that periodically on and off because vacancies have dropped us into an actual tie. Even though there are 203 seats in the state House, Chris, there aren't really that many of them where there are going to be contested primaries or generals, are there?
No, I think the number is almost 50% of incumbent House members do not have a challenge in the fall. So that's a pretty big number. That said, because there are so many of them, 203, there will be a handful of contentious House races in the state. The last election, 2022, you had the new districts come online because of redistricting, and you had a couple of seats that were won or lost by less than 300 or 400 votes, even in a state House district, which is essentially one-half of 1% of the state. 200-300 votes is a very small number. So you'll have a lot of challenges on both sides from both the House Democrats and the House Republicans. Like you said, they can sometimes fly underneath the radar because you have all the other seats going on. But I wouldn't be surprised if you had at least 8 to 10 seats really up for close races there in the state house. So it's a busy year here in Pennsylvania. If you are a registered Democrat or Republican, please get out and vote. And if you're an independent, nonpartisan, please get ready to vote in the fall.
We have been talking with veteran political consultants Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, tell us about Eagle Consulting. Where can folks go to? You do a number of TV shows and podcasts. Where can folks go to see all that?
Thank you, Loman. They can go to our website, eagleconsult.com, or if they're interested in the podcast series I did last year on political corruption in Pennsylvania, they can go to PAPoliticalDigest.com and listen to those six episodes we did talking about political corruption in Pennsylvania.
And we're awaiting the sequel. So this is Pennsylvania after all. Chris Nicholas from Eagle Consulting. Chris, thank you for being back with us.
Thanks, Loman.
Property reassessments are politically controversial, and for that reason, counties avoid undertaking the process as long as possible. But now a lawsuit may force the hand of Allegheny County. For details, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi for this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. A recent development in Allegheny County where the Allegheny County Chief Executive has been sued by the Pittsburgh Public School District for not conducting annual reassessments. Our reassessments are using a base year that's about 10 years old, and they're not happy. So could you please tell our listeners what the lawsuit's all about?
You summarized it there. The lawsuit is to force Allegheny County to conduct a reassessment, and this would be going down the same road that the county did in 2001 and 2012, where the last case went all the way to the Supreme Court. But Pittsburgh Public Schools is dealing with an issue where they're looking at their budget. They've been affected by appeals on skyscrapers in downtown Pittsburgh that have been won by the owners, and that's due to a decrease in the common level ratio, which is a measure that's calculated every year for every county in Pennsylvania, and then it's used in appeals. The Pittsburgh Public School Board, it's one of 43 school districts in the county, but it's the largest, and it's the second largest in the state. They passed a resolution in March that would authorize their solicitor, their lawyer, to file a lawsuit. There was a few weeks where the school board solicitor said that he would see if the county was willing to voluntarily conduct a reassessment. And if not, then the lawsuit would be filed, and that's where we are now.
And what I think a little more background on this is, one of the impetuses for this lawsuit is that the vacancy rates for skyscrapers downtown became so bad that it hindered the ability of the owners to make a proper living, and the assessments were based, of course, on the value of those skyscrapers, which were in turn based on the value of the leases within. And with the pandemic and the work from home culture that took place, most people aren't coming back. A lot of firms either downsized or moved. And then, of course, you add to that the downtown area being filled with a little more panhandlers and homeless and crime running amok and whatnot. You had people leaving. And as those property owners went to the county assessor's office, said, look, you have U.S. Steel Tower written off as this, and we can't make that kind of money. We're respectfully asking for a reduction in the assessment value. Oh, by the way, the common level ratio, as you alluded to, says that it's not 100% anymore. It's, 60, 50? We'd like to have a redo. And the county assessors slashed the assessments on a lot of skyscrapers downtown, costing the city and the school district and even the county millions of dollars. Furthermore, because the common level ratio goes back about 2 years, there's a chance, a very, very good chance, that those three taxing bodies are going to owe refunds to these building owners. So the Pittsburgh City Schools stepped up and, wait a minute, we need a better system here. We need accurate assessments. And that sort of stepped in. And what caused a lot of this stuff was all those reassessments. And look, if it could happen here in Pittsburgh, it could happen elsewhere in Allegheny County. And quite frankly, elsewhere across the state.
Been the base year since 1982, when the legislature said that counties can assess on current market value or a base year standard. That's when they started using and having the STEB, the State Tax Equalization Board, calculate a common level ratio. So you have counties right now that are in the pipeline of doing reassessments. Some of them haven't done them since the late 1960s or early 1970s. Some of them have done them voluntarily, meaning their county government has acted to do it. And some of them have done it under the threat of a lawsuit. And that's where Allegheny County is now. So we have to see what the next step is going to be with this lawsuit from Pittsburgh Public Schools. It may be joined by other taxing bodies in the county, but that's the product of having a base year.
Westmoreland County, which earlier this year has enacted one of the largest tax hikes to property taxes in their recent memory, and you know, we've written about that, and we said, look, you know, you need to maintain accurate assessments. Their commissioners have said, there's no way we are going to do a reassessment without a court order. We're just not going to do it because it's viewed as political suicide. Even though state law says if there's a reassessment, the taxing body has to remain revenue neutral, which means it has to adjust the millages so that overall it's revenue neutral. Now, of course, some property owners will be hit with an increase, but some property owners will be hit with a decrease and some will see no change. It all depends on if the value of your property has gone up appreciably and you're still stuck at a base year assessment, you're not paying the fair share. But yet if your property has devalued over the years and the base assessment stays higher than it would be on your house, you're paying more than your fair share.
As we said before, Pennsylvania allows counties, municipalities, and school districts to all tax real estate. It's the only tax source that's shared between the three. But yet Pennsylvania just allows assessments to be frozen in time. And as you mentioned, when there is a change, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of trepidation because people will think, if my value has gone up X percent, that means my taxes are going up X percent. And the millage rates do have to be adjusted. We went through this here in 2013 in Allegheny County with this caveat. The taxes can go up. It's just that the taxing bodies have to do it in a specific vote that's separate from establishing the revenue neutral rate. So that way that the taxpayers are clear that, well, we've been reassessed, the new rate has been established, but this taxing body wants to take more this year. And obviously, in between this reassessment, or excuse me, the 2013 reassessment and where we are now, there's been plenty of tax increases that have come that have been advertised and are so-called front-door tax increases rather than one that happens during a reassessment.
I'd like to thank my colleague Eric for joining me today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like more information on this or any other topics, I would invite you to visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. Thank you very much.
As consumer resistance to electric vehicles grows, the Biden administration is putting into place mandates designed to force a transition from fossil fuels. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
We are a nation that is roughly $34.5 trillion in debt, a number that would be comical if it weren't so very real. Unfortunately, it has the potential to get even worse. The Green New Deal, which President Biden's allies continue to advocate for, not only picks winners and losers in a global shakeup of economies, but it also benefits a very select few and would cost $93 trillion in the first decade alone, according to American Action Forum. Simply put, it's the intentional bankruptcy of the best republic ever created. Currently under the guise of Bidenomics, the Biden administration has actively pursued a series of misguided energy policies that not only jeopardize our energy security, but also hinder economic growth and job creation. The administration has decided that their friends who own these green corporations shall be the sole beneficiaries of your hard-earned tax dollars to provide you with products that simply don't work and are not even valued at the cost of expenditure. All of this while ensuring that you will pay even more for utilities, gas, and ultimately have perpetual inflation. Instead of unleashing America's energy potential with renewables and fossil fuels, the president is picking winners and losers. If you're not part of the Renewable Energy Club receiving government handouts, you're losing out. Not only are you personally losing out, our nation is losing on the international stage. While the president gives billions to his friends in the green energy industry, he hits traditional energy companies with overregulation. This closes pipelines, this halts production, preventing exports, and it drags out permitting processes that don't help the environment, they don't help the economy, and they certainly don't help you. The result? Americans are paying more at the pump. Biden is not changing course. He's doubling down. Last month, the White House banned the construction of new liquefied natural gas export facilities. These facilities not only create jobs, particularly in energy-producing states like Pennsylvania, using fossil fuels to turn them into cleaner energy, they also help America with its exports in Europe. In short, Bidenomics energy policies are only helping crony energy corporations. The debate about renewable energy and its potential might be new, but Biden's giveaways to these energy companies are plain old cronyism. Here's how much taxpayer money President Biden has funneled to green energy companies. $27 billion to a, quote, greenhouse gas reduction fund managed by the EPA, subsidizing green energy and tech companies. $20 billion to automobile companies to buy EV-friendly tools and facilities. $250 billion in direct subsidies for the Biden administration's friends in the ESG movement. $18.6 billion for electric and alternative fuel vehicles charging stations. The list goes on and on. If you do the math, in total, it's $341.6 billion of taxpayer money Biden spends in his green energy cronyism scheme. If he were to enact his Green New Deal, that number would rise to $65,000 per American. President Biden uses the federal government as a blunt instrument to harm the coal, gas, and oil industries. Biden has used almost all the tricks he has at hand to damage the non-renewable industry. This false binary choice between renewable and non-renewables is foolish, and Americans are paying handsomely for Bidenomics. As Americans, we understand that there is never a one-size-fits-all answer to our complex issues. Biden's policies make Americans pay a steep cost every time they go to the gas station or pay their utility bills. As you go to the pump this week, you will see yet another jump, inching even closer to $4 a gallon. Energy prices in your home have increased 32% since the president started attacking American energy. When Biden took the oath of office, Americans paid an average of $2.38 for a gallon of regular unleaded gas. A year and a half later, gas went to a high of $5 per gallon. Utilities have also gone up. Americans pay 29% more for electricity and gas today than in 2021. Winter heating costs from all energy sources have gone up anywhere from 16 to 64%. We are almost 4 years into Biden's presidency, and the results are clear for everyone to see. Gas, electricity, and heating are more expensive. Pennsylvanians aren't buying, quote, Bidenomics, but they sure are paying for it. Head to Bidenomics.com to send a strong message to this administration. Get government out of the way so that we can allow this economy to thrive. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPHB-AM in Phillipsburg, WJAS-AM in Pittsburgh, along with WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.